Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond. Thanks for tuning in today for another episode. I am super excited to have Mikhail Biker back on the Mindful Movement Podcast. Mikhail, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me again, Les. Wonderful, wonderful.
You were one of our first guests on the podcast back in 2020. I remember I took your breathwork certification course, which was a pivotal point in my breathwork practice, and got so much value out of it. Just so much value. Very grateful to have gone through that process and for the work that you've put in creating that. And also, recently, I feel like I've fallen out of the practice and miss all those benefits and moments on the mat, and I wanted some fresh inspiration and also a little fresh education, and thought who better to bring on to the podcast to educate myself and bring the audience along for the ride than you. So thank you for taking the time to do it.
Wonderful, wonderful. Let's do it. Let's make it an inspiring talk together, and get back on the health and connection mode again, to stay connected with our true selves.
Now, you're in Portugal, and you hold like retreats and different live sessions there, and then you have a lot of online courses, such as the one that I've taken. That looks like a really cool setting back there. I just saw an animal while walking behind you, and it looks like you are subject to, you have a little visitor, a little fly floating around giving you trouble, I see. Hopefully the fly settles down and lets you engage here. So before we get into maybe the benefits in general of breath work and how you go about it, and ultimately learning more about the bandhas, which I'm really interested in and just haven't been educated on, how did you get, in summary, I know you've probably detailed this several years ago, but the podcast probably has many different listeners now than it did 4 years ago. How did you get involved in practicing yoga in general and breath work?
Mm. So when I was younger, I was always thinking about the things in life, about spirituality, about God, what is reality, what is life and everything. And I was diving deep into all sorts of philosophies and books, and coming myself from a Christian background, diving deep into that as well. And in a way, I got a lot out of that, very beautiful, but it didn't completely clench my thirst, so to say. And I needed something more practical, not just to know things with the mind, but more to really experience the truth, so to say. That, and then I realized that the truth is not really just a story about reality, or a nice idea, or a nice philosophy, or a nice piece of text, but the truth can only be directly experienced. And how to get myself into that state to be able to experience it, I recognized, was through all these techniques of meditation, mainly in the beginning. But in the beginning, I had a bit of trouble with meditating to keep the mind still. And it became sometimes almost like a bit of a frustrating experience, because I tried to still a restless mind. And I noticed that if you do some techniques before, like doing some breath work, like doing some asana yoga practice and all that, then it's a lot easier to bring the mind into stillness and to go with your awareness beyond the mind, so to say, and to go deeper within. So then I started to dive also deeper into this. And another thing that I had in my life was skin issues. I suffered a lot from eczema. And there was another part. So on the one hand, on the spiritual mental side, there was a thirst that was clenched by doing the actual practices. But on the physical side also, I was suffering from certain ailments like eczema, skin problems. And then also the doctors said like, oh, you put some cream on it, and you put cream on it for some months or some years, but the skin actually gets more thin and thin by the creams that I was given. Then I was even giving medication for it because my whole skin was just completely flared up with eczema. And then I also realized, well, you can try to treat it from the outside with creams or medication, but there's something deeper that I have to work on here. And then I also saw that I had to, on a deeper level, go to the root of the problem, which was that I had a very restless and unstable mind, and with that, a restless and unstable energy system, nervous system, which caused all this flaring up of the body. So then I really got into the practice. And then even more, another, let's say, a challenge happened in my life, that I had a big car accident when I was 18. And I had my spine, my disc broken in two places. My hip, my arm was paralyzed for some time. And I was really pushed then to heal myself with, by the grace of God, of course, but with all these techniques to use them. So I could really use all these techniques with the Qigong, with the yoga, to heal myself. And from there, it became just a part of my life, basically, and something that I wanted to share.
Well, thank you for sharing that. It's from the wound comes the gift. So
that's it.
You know, you have offered so much to so many people, and it, born out of the pain and suffering you had to endure. I applaud you for sticking with it and finding, you know, going inward and not relying on, I guess, the medical system and handing over your power, but going within and figuring it out. That is, I love those types of stories. I remember my first introduction to you was through a YouTube video that came up on my feed. And it was like a beginner's full practice that's still up there. I've watched that video hundreds of times.
Nice.
You know, and it's the scene of it is epic. You know, you're sitting there. I think you had like some strong beard game at the time of that video. And you essentially coach through four different breath patterns. It's about 30, 35 minutes. And I've done that sequence or some variation where if I don't have as much time, just like a abbreviated version, just so many times. And it has never failed to deliver. And there's just something about dedicating time for a legitimate breath practice where it's not 5 minutes. Like the difference of spending 5 or 10 minutes or 20 or 30 minutes is substantial. And, you know, with all the things to fit in life, you know, it's easy to organize your priorities where you never get to something like that. Because for most people, I think they would look at the benefits of like something more physically demanding, like more traditional physical exercise, they would think would be more beneficial. When in reality, for the average person's generally overstressed. Sometimes that's just more stress. And that being said, the breath practice can have a stressful component too, but you know, much more subtle. Overall, generally much less stressful. And it's probably what most people need more of. And it's funny, I work in a gym environment, and the first thing we always teach is connecting to breath, and we spend a few minutes on it every session. And that's great, but we have all these other things I feel like we have to get done, because that's what people come for the other things. But when you take it, when you dive deeper and you take it to that next level, where it's not just a few minutes, and it's, you know, several rounds of a few different patterns, I mean, you come out of the session a different human being than when you go in. I have some questions about the practice itself, but I was hoping to get your opinion first, more generally, what you think how would you describe the benefits in general to having a breath practice where you are devoting time with the intention just to do that, not to get anywhere else, but just to do that thing, just to have that practice?
Yeah, the thing is, in our society, of course, everything is always going on 24/7. If you're not careful, you can be linked with the whole world and your social media the whole time. And then it's easy to lose connection with yourself, with your foundation. And then also that we can spend so much time in our mind, in our thoughts, maybe about some things that happened in the past, or worry about the future, or and then we get still again spiraled into certain patterns of thinking, which don't really serve us. That in this moment, that everything is actually okay. You can sit, you can breathe, you have food, you can eat. But with our mind, we keep going back to certain things that create suffering again and again and again in our life. So how can we again connect really our awareness with what is truly here and now beyond the mind? And to establish a healthy and good relationship with our, of course, own emotions and our own body and everything, to be able to go within and to just feel what is truly, truly present. So on the one hand, it helps us to step out of a mind that is constantly not here, really. And on the other hand, it's also bringing us back to our true self, through what we are in essence, so to say, our pure consciousness. And why is this so important? Because the more we take a little moment, even if it's just 10 minutes, or even if it's just 5 minutes, or just a couple of breaths, to recognize, okay, right here, right now, it's all okay. Just to be, I'm alive right now. If momentarily we make little mini breaks for our mind to step out of certain patterns of thinking and feeling and go into a state of pure presence, that becomes more and more our natural habit pattern of feeling and thinking. And of course, we go through life with challenges, and there are certain challenges that come up in our daily life. And of course, there are certain emotions that need to be resolved and everything. But we do this with a much more groundedness, much more stable foundation, a much more, let's say, a mature, mature, wise spirit attitude, if you know what I mean. And of course, it's got all the physical benefits as well of having a more calm nervous system. Your heart rate is more optimized. Your breathing patterns are more optimized during the day. It really helps to heal all sorts of disease. There's many research has been done about this, how meditation and breath work has all sorts of physical benefits. But I think much more important than the physical is the mental, because with some people maybe the body is in a very healthy optimum state and they can run marathons and everything is fit and they're strong. But if your mind is not in a good state, if your emotional system is not in a good state, you're still suffering.
Yeah, for sure. It's interesting you mentioned, as you practice, essentially whatever you practice grows stronger, and you alluded to the idea of you become, I guess, more calm in your response to the life situations. And, you know, That's a really important aspect. I mean, I know it wasn't that long ago where I was, in general, just way more quick to react to all the things in life that I didn't like, that like that were against my expectation or my desire, in such a immature way. Like you mentioned, you get more mature. Like I was essentially being immature about how I would react and lash out and maybe project some personal insecurity onto somebody else or whatever. And as you practice that stillness and that, you know, going inward and that peacefulness, you become more peaceful, not just physically how you feel, but the way you approach those things. And you could respond to the ups and downs of life with a little bit more skill. It also, absolutely, like as you practice these breath patterns, you become a better breather, like mechanically. Mm-hmm. One thing I've also noticed working with people in the gym environment is they come in and they're all stressed, and their breath mechanics are just so wonky. Like they're so locked in on this compensatory strategy that they use to take air in. And, you know, the air you're taking in is the rhythm of your life. It's like it's the one constant you have from when you arrive to when you die. And it dictates so much, and it's unique in that it'll run in the background, but also we could take over from the autonomic system that's keeping us alive, and we can manipulate it. But when you get someone that comes, you know, they go right from school, right to college, high stress, even though they're having fun, then they get thrown into the work environment. And I don't know how it is in Portugal, but around here, it's so productivity driven. Mm. And it's like people wear busyness as a badge of honor of some sort. And they've been, and then they wind up starting a family or whatever, which is stressful and a lot of work, and they're layering it on top of work. And then they're 50 and they find me in the gym because they're tired of feeling like crap or whatever. And they've been locked in a stressful breath pattern, you know, taking 15 to 20,000 stressful breaths a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
For 25, 30 years.
No, that's it. And then sometimes they expect you to fix it in a couple of sessions, maybe, right?
Yeah.
A pattern that's built up for 20, 30 years of a stressful living, stressful thing that went all in every cell of the body, basically, reflect back, and then looking for somebody else to fix. But it's great that you then can give, of course, the techniques for themselves to work with and to work on optimizing again their energy.
Boy, if I could fix it in one session, think of what you could charge people. What a business model. And I definitely changed my approach after taking your, even though I had already been practicing and I've already been coaching some basic breath stuff, but when I took your breathwork instructor course, I felt like I had so many more tools in the toolkit.
Yeah, to wonderful. Help people. Yeah.
And it was fun, even though we were only spending a few minutes because we had, you know, so much other stuff to do in the session. It was nice to have people just taste a little exploration of like a different breath pattern. And I would only do one at a time, whereas in your sessions, they're generally multiple, which I want to get into a little bit. But it was nice to just be able to watch people go through that and experience, you know, a momentary, because some of them are pretty powerful as far as you'll feel like you're experiencing a different state of consciousness.
For sure.
For a short period of time. And many people have never really done that. It's like you're kind of on drugs a little bit, but they're drugs that your body made for you, which is very unique for some people.
But that little moment of a shift of awareness, that instead of the awareness always in the mind and always thinking about what is next, I still have to do this, to shift the awareness back inward and to recognize that there is already a sense of peace, that people can just sit for a moment and they feel like, hey, I already feel at ease, I already feel at peace. And this creates a big shift also in their whole awareness, that they recognize like, okay, I can already feel at peace here and now. I don't have to first accomplish this and accomplish that and do this and do that. I can already feel peace. That makes a big difference. And of course, also what you said about that people have take 20,000 breaths a day, sometimes in the wrong way, because their whole nervous system is just in such a high active overdrive state that the breathing is very short and not deep. Sometimes the diaphragm is completely locked up because of all the stress and they don't breathe properly deep into their lungs. So the whole exchange of carbon dioxide and oxygen is off, basically, which creates even more stress as a response in the body. So sometimes people look very much about the perfect diet and looking on every package what they eat, and which is, of course, a good diet is essential, don't get me wrong. And drinking enough water, of course, very good also. But you can be without food for about 40 days. You can be without water for about 5 days. But try stop breathing for 10 minutes and tell me how you go. So the breathing is fundamental, it's essential. If your breathing is not proper, is not right, then the whole foundation of your being is not right. So therefore, it's so important to work on the breath.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny you mentioned, you mentioned like people being able to experience that peace as if almost you're reminded that it's already there.
That's it.
And it's as if not only do we forget that it's there, but it's like we commit to forgetting that it's that it's there. Yeah, you mentioned CO2 a moment ago, and one thing I wanted to have these other things I want to talk to. We'll get to those next. But one thing that is very common I notice, people come in and they're taking so many breaths per minute, let's say. Mm-hmm. And the first thing I try to do is have them shine a light on that, like be aware, follow the breath, watch it, you know, be an observer to some extent, and just present the option, the idea of taking fewer breaths, like what would that be like, and slowing down, and just watching them organically try to figure out how to slow that down. Can you refresh the relationship of the rapid breathing and the gas exchange, like to get a little technical for a second, the relationship between carbon dioxide and oxygen and how it relates to that rapid breathing, because I think it's generally counterproductive, like it's counterintuitive when people hear it.
Because most
people think if you're not getting enough, you want to breathe more, breathe faster, get more oxygen in you, but it's the opposite, isn't it?
Yeah, there just has to be the right balance, because the thing is, of course, if you breathe way too less, then of course there is not enough oxygen in the body to function properly. But the funny thing is, if you breathe more, sometimes people think, then I bring more oxygen into my body and then I will oxygenate my body more, which is not the case at all. Because if you overbreathe you breathe more than you need, basically, then you are also gassing off, you're releasing too much carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide is actually needed for the hemoglobin to release the oxygen into the cells. So in the red blood cells, the hemoglobin, they are traveling through the body, they pick up the oxygen in the blood, but they need to release it, and that's partly because of the acidity level in the blood. And the acidity level in the blood is determined by the level of carbon dioxide in the blood. So if the acidity level is very low, if the blood is very alkaline, then the oxygen kind of stays stuck on the hemoglobin. It cannot be released in the cells. And if there's lots of carbon dioxide, if the high acidity level, then it releases easier. It's called the Bohr effect. So basically by having an optimum state of acidity and not too alkaline, but also not too acidic, then the oxygen is being released very easy into the cells. And the funny thing is that if you breathe normal, if you breathe properly, the blood is already saturated for about 97-98% with oxygen. You can increase it maybe to 99%, maybe if you do like really like 20 minutes of full hyperventilating, maybe you can bring it to 100%. But the difference is super small when you overbreathe. The carbon dioxide level, though, goes very much down if you hyperventilate for some time. So there is actually no more oxygen released in the cells. Another important thing for this is, with the level of CO2, the acidity level in the blood, it also determines vascular contraction or dilution. So that either your veins in your whole body, they start to contract when there's low acidity, when the blood becomes very alkaline, and it starts to open up when the blood becomes acidic, when there's high levels of CO2. So meaning that if you do hyperventilation, sometimes people think, then I bring a lot of oxygen in my body. They hyperventilate, the oxygen level goes up maybe just 2%, maybe 3%. But because of this Bohr effect, that there is very low level of acidity, blood becomes alkaline, the oxygen cannot be released in the cells, and all the veins and all the capillaries and everything start to contract. So there's actually less blood flow around the vital parts, around the brain, for example. So then people start to space out. They start to get dizzy or sometimes even faint, because there is you're actually depriving the brain of oxygen. So the opposite happens actually. And sometimes people say, oh, you get high because of the oxygen. No, you get high because of the lack of oxygen, that people start to sometimes faint or space out. Now, it has its own benefits. Don't get me wrong. It's not like you should not do hyperventilative practices, but don't do it up to a level that you feel you're almost fainting. But to bring your blood into a very alkaline state for a moment, that's very good. To do long breath holds, to bring your blood into a very acidic state, high carbon dioxide level, is good. So that then after you're like resetting everything, in daily life, you have the exact right balance of breathing properly. That the control center of your breath sends out exactly the right signals to the breathing system to breathe in a proper way, that you have the optimum levels of carbon dioxide and oxygen in the blood. Right?
That's interesting. So carbon dioxide not only is needed for hemoglobin to release oxygen so it could be used within a tissue or cell, but it's essentially the body's natural vasodilator.
Yes, exactly.
So you don't need you don't need a little blue pill. You just need to breathe better, and you.
That's it.
And
exactly.
You get that vasodilation.
But you can't sell that.
Not a lot of money in trying to patent a breath pattern.
Yeah.
So speaking of breath patterns, so one thing that was really unique about going through your course and really that initial video that I just fell in love with that you put out on YouTube is like this sequence. There seems to be a rhythm or some logic to the order in which you'll do patterns. So for instance, in a session, there might be four patterns, and they could be interchanged, it seems, but each pattern kind of serves its purpose for its place in the sequence. Can you expand a little bit on what drives that decision of how to order those and why you have this type of pattern first and this one next and this one next and then finish with this one?
Yes, for sure. By the way, I just let the fly now go on my face because
I see you're very calm with that fly jumping on your face right now. So for the viewers and listeners, this is evidence of the benefits of breath work and meditation and yoga. You could be in the middle of an interview, have a fly all over you, and be cool as a cucumber, like no big deal.
If people get irritated by the fly, then I would highly recommend, also by the fly that's now on my face, then I would highly recommend do some breath work. That will help. But no, it's an interesting question that you ask. And the idea is that first you do activating breaths. Activating breaths are breaths where you bring in more air than you actually need, which is basically hyperventilation, right? This activates your sympathetic nervous system, so your heart rate goes up, the blood flow becomes stronger, your metabolism gets faster, everything starts to go into active mode. And this is in a way also on a more energetic level to start to move things, to start to unblock and open up things. But it's very important because sometimes people just get stuck with this practice. And the only thing that they practice is hyperventilating practice. And you feel a bit high afterwards. And wow, you've activated everything. And then you go back into normal life. And sometimes people keep doing that every day. The thing is, if you're only activating your nervous system, your energetic system, things will start to go out of balance after some weeks, after some months. And this is not beneficial. People will notice their sleep will become less stable. People will notice that their emotional states become less stable. They will become more, in a sense of ego. I need to control this. I need to control that. Everything gets a little bit more out of balance. Because this energy that you've been releasing needs to also be balanced. So in that video that you described, there are several different techniques. First we release, then we do what's called Kapalabhati. This helps to clean out a little bit more, to clean out the energy system a little bit more, to start to activate even a little bit more. It's also a bit of an activating and cleaning practice. But then it's about doing also the techniques to bring the energy a bit down with long breath holds, by slowing down the breath, by doing Anulom Vilom, the alternate nostril breathing, in which you slow down your breath and you lengthen your breath and you soften your breath. And by softening, by lengthening, by tuning everything down, everything starts to get a bit smoother. Everything starts to slow down. And then, at the end, it's possible to really go into a state of meditation. The thing that sometimes people don't understand that in this whole practice of pranayama, that there is a difference between spacing out and meditation. It's not the same. If you do three rounds of full hyperventilative practice, you feel, wow, sometimes even a bit of like outer body experiences, or you feel lots of sensations in the arms, or you see colors, or you see lights, or you really, just like a bit like taking drugs. This can help people to get out of their mind and really go into feeling really their body and the experience in the moment of the mind. The thing is, what we try to develop eventually is to go beyond the mind, is to go beyond very strong sensations of maybe tingling in the arms or maybe tingling in the face or maybe seeing lots of colors, but to be able to feel the subtleness of just being. The subtleness that you don't have to feel all this tingling and to space out to feel present. You can also, just by sitting and doing nothing, that you can already feel just the heart beating in your fingertips when you're just sitting and doing it. Or just to feel the skin of the face, or just to feel the soft, slow heartbeat, or the very soft, slow breath. And once you start to bring your awareness to that level of experience, of the subtle, subtle, subtle layers of your being, then you can bring your awareness onto a deeper, deeper, deeper layer of your being until you get to the like the source of yourself, the source of your being, this greater consciousness, so to say. So that's why there is the steps of unblocking, opening up, then doing some more cleaning maybe, and then to slow down, slow down, slow down. And the more advanced the practitioner becomes, it's not that he or she can do even more strong breaths and do 10 rounds of 50 breaths or whatever it is, or do 20 minutes of hyperventilation, but it's that you can do with a lot less hyperventilation, maybe just one round of 7 deep breaths, then slowing down the breath, and that one can very easily go into the modes of slow, deep breathing, slow, calm breathing, to go into a deep state of meditation already without having to do so much before. To give you one more example, lots of information coming through. I hope also the listeners are sometimes taking a nice deep breath. But you can see it a bit like when you have different types of sandpaper, right? If you want to make a nice smooth tabletop of wood, and first maybe the wood is very rough and you need a grinder, like a really rough piece of sandpaper. First you grind up the rough patches, and then you start to make the sandpaper a bit more smooth, until eventually the sandpaper is such a fine sandpaper that it becomes just shiny smooth. You put some more oil on it, you let the oil soak in, take some time to let the oil soak in, and then that piece of wood is so shiny you can almost see your own reflection in it. And it's, if you would then again use rough sandpaper, you would make it again scratchy, right? So that's why if people start to do this practice a lot, like every day, eventually you don't need to do so much of the rough sandpapering anymore. You can just already start doing the smooth sandpapering. And maybe eventually it will already be quite smooth and shiny. You just have to put a bit of oil on it, meaning just very, very super soft breathing, just letting the breath happen without doing, without activity, letting it soak in. So that people can go right into a state of just looking into that shiny image of life, of presence, of just being.
That is a fantastic analogy with the sandpaper. I've never heard that. I might steal that one, Mikhail. That is fantastic.
wonderful. Well, share the knowledge, yes.
And it resonates. I remember in my more regular practice, like that first breath pattern in that video, I think it's called, is it Bastrika? Mm-hmm. I might be botching it, where you are doing that mild hyperventilation, but mm-hmm. just like a little dose of it. I remember it would produce these really long natural exhales that I could easily go for a minute plus, essentially with a breath hold or just a really slow exhale. And then after a while, I would just do, like, at any time, I could do like five, sometimes even like 3 vigorous inhales and then be right there.
Yes.
Where it took way less time, effort, work to have a really long, calm exhale. And then I was like, you know, my nervous state had a shift, and then I could just leave it there or I could move on to something else. But I remember it taking a lot less to get from that initial, from starting point to that initial like breakthrough moment where, okay, now you've arrived, now you're in your practice.
Yes.
And that's interesting. I love that. I am a amateur woodworker, so I really resonate with that analogy. So there's a method to the madness of the order. So you kind of start with a little, like invigorating, stimulating, and then you mentioned the idea of like cleansing. On that one video, I remember there's a third breath in between before you go to the alternate nostril, and I forget the name of it, but it was essentially where you exhale fully and hold. And it always, and you only did, you know, like 7 or 8 rounds of it. And I remember that always feeling like the climax of the practice, almost like everything built up to that. That was my favorite part.
Beautiful.
I want to say it was.
It's called Bahia Kumbhaka.
Bahia Kumbhaka. And it had a nickname, I think, like bellow breath, maybe. Like it was almost like you were, or maybe I'm wrong on that. But okay, can you say it again? Bahia Kumbhaka.
Bahia Kumbhaka.
Bahia. I want to know this. Kum, say it again.
Kumbhaka. Yes. So it's this one where you sit and then you exhale fully.
And then you hold, yeah. And you hold the bandhas, which I want to get into next. But yeah. That pattern like grew to be my favorite for like a year or so.
Hmm.
And then I would finish with that really calming centering. Is it the alternate nostril breathing?
Yeah.
And I would just love it.
Yeah.
I have a real short story sidetrack before I get into the bandhas, but that alternate nostril breathing, I also had a history of eczema and it flared up really bad for a couple years. And I was trying everything. And along the road of trying everything, I found a local clinic that had this program where it was like a membership program and you could go and get different treatments. It was like an integrative health place. And one of the treatments I got for several months was a weekly neurofeedback thing where I would sit at a computer and they would put headphones on and they hooked up all these sticky things to my brain. And I would watch this video of like, and it was trying to like retrain the brain to get out of a stress state. And I would watch this like kaleidoscopy stuff while listening to music. And it did this very interesting thing. It had this mechanism where it was mapping out the activity in your brain, and there was like a sweet spot of the activity, meaning the relationship of how much like delta waves and alpha waves and theta waves and beta waves. And it was like they were looking for them to be organized in a certain way. And if it read that your brain was jumping out of certain parameters, the music would glitch for like a millisecond, just enough to get your attention to bring yourself back. It was very interesting. But at the end of the session, this guy would come in and set me up. It was like a half hour. And then he'd come in afterwards and he would show me the results and the brain activity would be tracked. And there was always this lopsided thing where you'd have more activity on one side of the brain. And it was substantial delta. Like the difference between one side and the other was very obvious. And it was usually the same side. And once in a while, it'd be the other side, but it was never even. And then one day I tested it, and I did for like a half hour, I did the alternate nostril breathing, thinking I'm crossing hemispheres of activity in my brain. And sure enough, after the session, the guy came in, and it was locked dead even.
Wow.
And I was telling him what I did, and he was very interested in this stuff, and it was like a big experiment for him, because he's seen thousands of brain maps during this process. And I remember thinking, I think that's what people mean when they say get centered or be centered. Mm-hmm. Like this is it. It's like, this is a modern scientific-y way to provide evidence, to show that, where everybody kind of knows innately when they feel kind of balanced, centered, whatever, but it could also sound kind of flaky or woo-woo, but yeah, it was like, yeah. Oh, I had hard evidence here. I had a machine reading my brain electronics activity.
Yes.
And it was literally showing me being balanced after doing a ancient, balancing or centering breath practice.
Which, yeah, very, very wonderful thing.
It was cool.
It's great. But more and more science is catching up with all these things, right? And the science is showing. But this is fantastic that you saw directly the scientific results of a simple act of just alternate nostril breathing. And I think for a lot of people, when they hear the word pranayama or alternate nostril breathing, or anulom vilom, sometimes even like alarm bells start to ring and they think like, oh, this is that hocus pocus stuff or something like that. But luckily, everything is getting more and more into science, and the research is being done with it, and that people can show, like, here, look, it's real, it does work. And then people go like, oh, well, if the science says so, then right. I'm willing to try it, right?
So I wanted, this was one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, to get a little education on the Bondos. Now, a moment ago when you were starting to demonstrate that one, I'm not going to be able to say it, Kumbaka.
Bahia
Kumbaka.
Yes, okay. Exactly. Yes.
I saw that you were doing that hold where you essentially sucked in your torso to some extent. So Bondos are clearly a integral part of pranayama, and I guess they're like locks it refers to. Can you give us the Bonda 101, like the intro to what they are and why they're used?
So in the yogic practice, it is of course I believe that the whole body is one system of energy, and it is, of course. We only see nowadays, we measure the electric signals that are flowing through the body, but it's of course also the chemical energy that is in the body, and this whole accumulation of all the energies in the body, one can say like that's like prana, that's like a life force, because electric energy just by itself, and there's no life in it, is just electric energy. But in the body, with a certain intelligence behind it, it becomes a life force, a life energy, or chemical energy, with the reaction of glucose and oxygen in every cell, constantly combustion, little explosions almost are taking place in the body. That's a life force, a life energy behind it. So this prana. And there is this flow through the body constantly, and especially through the spine. That's like we see also in modern science, just that the nervous system, all these nerves, they come together, they go through this highway of nerves through the spine. So that's also believed that the prana, the life force, also flows through there. And there's different energy centers, different energy points. And one of the important energy points is like at the root of our the root chakra, Mula Bandha. And then there's different chakras in different places, for example, also around the belly, but also the heart. We have a lot of nerves coming together around the heart, around the belly, the digestive system. They call this in modern science also your second brain, because there's so many nerves coming together there. It's like a bundle of nerves, just like the brain. And around the throat are thyroid glands, of course, our brain. So all these different places where it's like a little bundles of nerves coming together, or on a subtle level, little bundles of where the prana system has their crossings or their how would you say, the where a lot of them come together. So what we try to develop with all these techniques is to make everything flow without any blockages. But we go through life and we feel that sometimes if we have a certain emotion, that our heart area starts to tense up physically. We feel that's really tensing up, or our diaphragm gets really tensed up and we don't breathe properly. Or sometimes people feel that you start to frown, or you get headache if you are too much in your mind, or if you're feeling not connected, not rooted at your lower belly. So all these different points in our nervous system, but also in our pranic system, they have to be opened and cleaned so that all the life energy can flow good. All the emotions, there's no overactivity in some parts of your energetic system, and no underactivity, that everything is balanced and good. So what we do with these bandhas and all the breathing in combination with all the breathing techniques is to, for example, to do some activating breaths where we start to activate our whole nervous system, but also our pranic system, that everything starts to flow. But for a moment then we stop and we make a lock. For example, this root lock, Mula Bandha. And what we do, if we contract this area here, we make this lock, is for a moment we push that flow of energy more upwards. So from our root energy, which you could say that's where our drive to survive is, our drive to procreate, our drive to just survive in this physical world, we try to bring that more up. For example, more towards our heart.
I'm sorry, Mikhail, I don't want to stop you off, but you glitched out for about 20 seconds there. Can we rewind? You were just talking about, and I don't know if it recorded or not. We'll fix this in editing if needed, but you were just talking about the Mula Bandha, the root lock, and how when you lock that, you're forcing or encouraging, I guess, the pranic energy to go up from there.
Yes, exactly.
And you were about to reference what that was related to, and you cut out.
Okay. Now, to get for a little moment again back to those different energy points, how they relate also to our emotional states. This is, I think, very important to understand that at the lower energy center, so to say, for example, Muladhara Chakra, is the place where the energy is of our intelligence to survive, so to say, to have our connection with this physical realm, to feel rooted. This is the area around, also if we look at the energy centers above it, around the belly, a reproductive system, that's all got to do with our connection with this physical realm. Because on a physical level, this is also where we take the nutrients of the food into the body. That's where we release the toxins that we don't need in our digestive system. That's where we have our organs for procreation, for creating new life and to spread life into the world. And if that is very unbalanced, then people will feel a disconnection with life, but also lots of fear and the drive to survive, just going in survival mode. Because if people are just in survival mode, there is not much of room for being able to feel love, to feel at peace, to think about others, to think about spirituality, because there's just a drive to survive. So that's that lower, let's say, the fundamental level of consciousness, so to say, just survival. But once that is okay, people can start to also feel more that they can enjoy a bit life, and they can feel that they can connect a bit more with other people. Also around the heart, if that's the emotional state that comes in, that you feel that you can have a connection, that you can feel love, that you feel there's a connection between more other human beings. If that is very closed off, people will also have states of anger, of frustration, of very closed off life, right? Now, if you can start to feel more connection with other living beings, with other human beings, then you are also more able, feel free to express yourself into the world, to say what you want to say, to feel the freedom to express yourself in life, in your creativity. That's around the throat chakra. And if everything starts to become more connected between you and other beings, you can say what you feel, you can really open up and listen, then that energy can go also even more up towards the upper parts of your energetic system, so to say, where you start to also feel that, as a matter of fact, everything is connected. I am part of something much greater than myself. I can look beyond just the survival mode of this small life of my ego that needs to survive, but I can also feel a love, a presence, a connection with a greater life than myself. And that activates very much that spiritual dimension of our consciousness. So that we go from just survival in this physical form to feeling that we can also feel a connection with other beings, that we can feel that we can express, we can create, we can flow in this dimension of creation and connection, and then feeling that, hey, I'm connected to something greater than myself. I can take my consciousness to a higher level of looking beyond just the physical realm of space and time. So this is the evolution of consciousness, so to say. Now, then we come to all these breathing techniques, all these things, is to bring balance and to evolve our consciousness from down to just survival up. So we do this with all these techniques to also bring the awareness more up and the energy more up. So we bring it just from the root and from the lower energy centers. We do, for example, Kapalabhati. We activate very much, yeah, that area. And then we do, for example, a breath hold, where we squeeze the muscles around the perineum. We squeeze the belly in, like we're squeezing that energy that is there up, so that we start to move the energy upwards, so to say. Very important. You follow so far, Les?
I do. So essentially, you're using the breath to channel the energy, to open it up. The yeah. locks themselves, the bandhas, they're, you're putting a lock to like emphasize that process?
Yes.
So that it can't flow the other way? It's like closing the valve so that the energy, to have a little bit more force in one, in the direction that you desire of that energy? Is that yes, what's
so,
going
so
on?
Momentarily, it is like, you know what happens if you block for a moment a stream of water. The pressure starts to build up. The pressure okay. starts to build up. It starts to overflow in some places. It's like a moment of purifying. And then when you release it, like poof, a flow of, a lot of energy can flow through. And with that big flow, it takes all the impurities, so to say, out. So you, okay. you create for a moment lots of pressure okay. on that flow. And then poof, everything can start to flow out, be cleared out after. So it's like partly bringing that energy up, but partly also to create a fresh flow of energy. And people will feel that after doing that, that you feel lighter, more clear, more clean in the energetic system. The mind is more clear, the emotions, everything is much, much more clear, and then you can sit in peace with the moment, with life, with yourself, and just sit like, now I feel purity within.
I like them.
Nice.
It's like, I like doing them. I like the experience, the feel I get. I just didn't really understand what the idea is to them. So that's interesting. So the idea, the analogy of a dam, like you're holding it up temporarily. So you're tinkering with the control dials a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, just like when you do a breath practice itself, it's like, yeah, it can run on autopilot, but you could also take over the controls and then affect your physiology or mental or emotional state from it. So it's just yes. another tool to tinker with the systems to, but ultimately you're still just working on this flow of energy, this pranic system to get it.
Yes.
Awake, move in, and limit interference, essentially.
Yes, yes. And on a physical level, when you contract the muscles around the perineum, you activate your prostate, you compress the internal organs, press old stagnant blood out of the internal organs, and then when you release again, new fresh oxygenated blood can flow through it. That's great physically also.
Right.
Also, this is one of the only in such a strong way technique to really stretch your diaphragm, to activate and stretch your diaphragm. And this is a very powerful thing also if the breathing patterns for most people is not right. And in the society that we live in nowadays, a lot of people hold so much tension that reflects back into the blockage of their diaphragm not breathing properly. So this is also really good for doing that, right? So on right. a physical level, it's also super good. But on a more subtle level, it's the energy system. One more thing about this is that it also actually activates a certain part of the brain. If I, you know, these different mudras, maybe, yeah, I can talk a lot about different moves, but there's different ways of holding the fingers, which will, in a way, channel the energy also differently. But this is all very, very subtle. But if you push a little bit on your finger, you are also activating a little a part of your brain, because you have to keep sending from the brain a certain signal to the fingers to push together, and you feel that. The same is if I keep holding, contracting the muscles around my perineum, around the Mula Bandha, I keep an activity at that part of my brain. If I keep sucking the diaphragm up, I keep an activity in the brain. If I keep contracting the muscles around the throat, it's not just on a physical level, it's also in the brain something you keep active for some time. And this activity, this connection that you make with these different parts of the body and the chakra system is also a very important part of that, that you connect yourself with these centers and activate them more.
Yeah, that's interesting. It reminds me, everything is like in our body, you use it or lose it, you know. So if it doesn't get stimulus, it atrophies. And most people could relate to the idea of like lifting a weight and getting stronger and developing yes. more musculature that with that new structure will provide function. But these real subtle areas of musculature are really out of sight, out of mind. You don't see them in the mirror. And if you haven't held a Mula Bandha and then you do it, you realize you'll feel weak. Like it can be very hard to do. And these are important structures. This is like, you know, the bottom of the pelvic floor. And just like when you go to the gym or you lift a weight, you become stronger, and then you're stronger when you're not lifting weight. You just become stronger. These get stronger. Like, it gets easier. And you probably do need some adequate level of strength in these, you know, hidden corners of the body that are out of sight, out of mind, that we're not really aware of or we're not really educated on. And this is an interesting way to tap into that, I wouldn't say alternative strength training, but this like important but neglected, neglected strength training that we need just to have the physical body be able to manifest in an optimal way. And I think most people are probably extremely weak in these areas, and that will be noticed when you go to practice it, especially for the first time, and you try to hold one of these, and it seems like it should be easy, and it's not. It's very fatiguing.
Yes,
very
yes,
fatiguing.
Yes. But like with everything, you do it a couple of times, your body is such a beautiful mechanism. It adapts. It starts to grow muscles. It starts to create new neural connections towards those parts. In your brain, it starts to create new neural pathways to be able to do all these things. So you are in a great way the designer of your own energetic state, the designer of your own nervous system, the designer of your own mental and emotional state. So these beautiful techniques, they help us to take not just control of that, but also the responsibility that comes with it, and the deeper connection and knowledge of the intelligence that drives it.
Yeah, I want to respect your time. I know wanted to keep this under an hour, and I'm a little over. You did allude to something that I want to learn more about. Maybe we could have you back on for round three one day to talk about the mudras and those different hand
Beautiful.
Positions. That is also seems very fascinating, and I feel very uneducated on it and would like to learn more. I personally have tinkered with them, but I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like playing around, and I do notice there's something there, but it would be nice to learn more and be able to articulate that better. So I can't think of anybody better to teach us that than you. So Mikhail, I want to thank you again for taking the time and being generous to come out onto the podcast and offer your teachings. When people want to learn more, is it yogalap.com the best place? So yogalap,
yes.
LAP.com.
Yes,
LAP stands for Life Awareness Project, I think, if I recall.
That's it. That's okay. LAP. Yes, yes. No, fantastic. Yes, come have a look there, and hopefully, do some of the videos there, and or look on YouTube, find some videos. The important thing is to hopefully the people that are listening to really start doing, not just listening to podcasts and not just watching videos, which is fantastic also, of course, but to really start doing all these practices of the breathwork, of meditation, of or doing sessions with less, or get into it, dive into it, action, not just listening action, and observing, yeah. But doing things. It's
yeah. Well,
important.
I have fallen off a little bit, and I was looking for some fresh inspiration, and I feel like I have it, and I'm looking forward to getting outside and practicing in nature. That's the way I like to do it.
Fantastic.
For beautiful. The listeners out there, I highly recommend check out Mikhail's yoga channel. What is the yoga the YouTube channel?
If you fill in my name, Mikhail Beiker, then
you'll
find the channel.
Lots of free content out there to dip your toe in. Give it a try. Mikhail is an excellent guide on the breath work, just the cues, the space he gives you. I think it's just outstanding. So I encourage you to check it out. And if you want to take a deeper dive, then go to the website and try a course, or go deep and go for a retreat. I would love to come out to Portugal and do one of the retreats maybe the next
beautiful.
Year or two. That sounds a little intimidating, but really exciting to me. So hopefully we meet in person one day in that context. Mikhail, thank you again. And for the listeners, always grateful for your listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and please share it with someone that you think might be interested. I hope everybody has a great day out there.